Blog Talk Radio.
That's right. Wake up, everybody. Welcome to MPH Radio. As the voice of MPH Radio, our theme today is the world we live in. That's right. We're going to talk about the world we live in, and we'd like to invite you to join us at 818-337-0016. That's the fourth day of March, 2023. And as you know, March has been dedicated as the International Women's Day. So we're going to talk a little bit about that in terms of we have a special poet, Sister Minister Mary, who's going to read a special message to us as it relates to women. We also have a special Black Minifact. As we deal with women, they're going to be pronounced and shared with you with Sister Susan, MPH. And, of course, we're going to follow this discussion with the world we live in, and we'd like you to join us, as well as we have a special important event coming up next weekend, and that event is the U.S.-Cuba Conference in Normalization. We have with us Brother Ike, who will share with you a little something about the conference, its importance, and how you can get involved. So that is the order for our agenda for today, and like always, you know how we do it on MPH Radio. This is a voice for the underserved communities. We want to first and foremost give you something to think about. And that thing about something to think about is we want to talk about the concept of freedom. Freedom is often something that is talked about, thought about. Millions of people have died over, and we're still trying to figure out what is this concept of freedom. So we can go back there into the history lane, and we're going to define some concepts of freedom as were related by some of our freedom fighters, heroes, and sheroes. The first definition of freedom comes from Muhammad Ali, where he's once stated, he who is not courageous enough to take the risk will accomplish nothing in life. That's right. That's our brother Muhammad Ali defined freedom. He who is not courageous enough to take risks will accomplish nothing in life. What you think about that definition? How does it fit into your day, your reality? The next one comes from Nelson Mandela. He said it, for to be free is not merely to cast off one's chain, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. Let me repeat that again from Brother Nelson Mandela. He said it, for to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. And last but not least, we're going to be Soldier in the Truth, who stated, truth is powerful and it prevails. Plain and simple. What y'all think about that concept of freedom? Truth is powerful and it prevails. You know, they often say the truth will set you free or make you free. So let's live the truth. So those are some of our concepts today for this whole question of freedom. Think about it. See how they fit into your reality and try to apply yourself to a better understanding, greater understanding of what freedom is. So at this point in time, we're going to move forward. Right now, like always, get out your pen and piece of paper. We're going to talk a little bit about, give you a little black minute fact. As this is the International Month of Women, we chose a woman to highlight for this particular program, and Susie, or MPH, is going to share that with you. Susie, we'd like to welcome you to MPH. Welcome.
Good evening. This afternoon, I'll be doing a minute fact for this Women's History Month of March on Maria W. Stewart. She was born 1803 and she died in December of 1879. Was a freeborn African American who became a teacher, journalist, lecturer, abolitionist, and women's rights activist. The first known American woman to speak to a mixed audience of men and women, white and black. She was also the first African-American woman to make public lectures, as well as to lecture about women's rights and make a public anti-slavery speech. The Liberator published two pamphlets by Stewart. They were Religion and the Pure Principles of Morality, The Sure Foundation on Which We Must Build, which called for abolition and black autonomy in 1831. And another of religious mediations from the pen of Miss Marie Stewart, 1832. In February 1833, she addressed Boston's African Masonic Lodge, which soon ended her brief lecturing career. Her claim that black men lacked ambition and prerequisite courage caused an uproar among the audience, and Stewart decided to retire from giving lectures. 7 months later, she gave a farewell address at a schoolroom in the African Meeting House, Paul's Church. After this, she moved to New York City, then to Baltimore, and finally Washington, D.C., where she worked as a school teacher and then head matron at Freedman's Hospital, where she eventually died. I've just given you a minute fact on Maria W. Stewart for this March 4th, 2023, with this Women's History March.
Thank you, Susan, for your Black Minifact for the International Men and Women. And at this point in time, we're going to take a quick break, music with a message. And when we come back, we're going to have our brother Ike from the QVC Coalition, and he's going to talk about a very, very important event and conference that's coming up next week. And we're going to make sure that not only are you aware of it, but we'd like to encourage you to join it. And he's going to tell us about the conference and how we can do all of that. And we will have Brother Ike shortly after this break with music with a message. This is MPH Radio. That's right. Find your strength and love for the people. Welcome back to MPH Radio. We're going to teach the children. That's the purpose and the essence of why MPH, Missing Pages of History Radio, came into existence. And on that note, we're going to teach the children a little bit about a very important country that we often hear misinformation about, but it's one of the most important countries today at this historical time that is being used as a tool to help advance humanity. There's an important conference coming up next weekend, and we can bring in our friend, Brother Ike from the QVC Coalition. He's going to talk about the importance of this conference in normalizing relationships between Cuba and U.S. And I want you to listen carefully, take notes, and next week I want you to join them. So, Ike, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. And what we're going to do right now, Brother Ike, you can formally introduce yourself, talk about your organization, but more importantly, Ike, why is this conference being organized, and what can the people take from it? The mic is yours, Ike. Welcome to MPH Radio.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lee, for the invitation to promote this important conference. I'd like to start by just giving folks, your listeners, the website where they can go directly and see the wonderful program that we have put together for the weekend to promote U.S.-Cuba normalization and to fight against the U.S. economic and political war against Cuba that is now in its seventh decade since the triumph of the Cuban Revolution in 1959. We'll get into some of the panels, but let me give this website number or letters. It's www.us-cubanormalizationconference.org. That's us-cubanormalizationconference.org. So I was listening to the first part of the program, Lee, and I was the theme of freedom, and I was thinking about how oftentimes the oppressor and the aggressor often tries to cover their deeds under the banner, the false flag of freedom, to use it in that way. And this is an example of what the U.S. policy against Cuba that I'm sure your listeners and your host today and yourself are well aware of. But this conference, if people go on the website, they'll see that we have panels on questions of Cuba and the labor movement with prominent trade unionists, including Chris Smalls, Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, who led a recent nurses' strike and who has led delegations of nurses to Cuba in the past to study and look at and learn from their amazing medical system, which is under tremendous pressure, like the entire Cuban economy, by the tightening U.S. Economic war, sanctions, and blockade that Biden has continued the anti-Cuba measures under Trump and in some ways has deepened them. So this conference is to protest, to unite, and organize people. Another panel that we have is Cuba and the African diaspora, which will focus on the relationship between historically and to the present day between Cuba, African liberation struggles, Caribbean struggles, and the collaboration between Cuba, which is a big part of the Caribbean, and African-American struggles historically, going back to the triumph of the Cuban Revolution, where among the first acts of the revolution was the smashing of Cuba's Jim Crow laws, where they copied the United States. And, of course, many people know the meeting between Malcolm X and Fidel. Anyway, people should look at the website. That's what we're doing. That panel also has Brother Anthony Williams on it, who's a member of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, a message from Kenya Serrano in Cuba. That'll be a great panel. but other panels on youth, women. There's a delegation from Cuba, and there'll be people from the Cuban mission to the UN and the Cuban embassy in D.C. attending the conference, the delegation coming in to attend the UN activities around women's rights, so they're able to come into the U.S. without obstacles from the U.S. government since it's a UN activity, and they'll be our guests of honor for the whole weekend.
Okay, brother, can you just talk a little bit about the importance of putting an end to the U.S. blockade and how it affects the people not only in Cuba but the people in the United States?
Well, the lifting of the blockade and having normalization would, of course, benefit the people of Cuba, which is why the U.S. government really resists doing it, because it would get the boot of the U.S. government off their neck and allow them to trade freely without U.S. sanctions, which are extraterritorial and threaten to sanction other countries. You know, Cuba is a country of 11.2 or 3 million people that is being bullied incessantly by a nation of 330 million, the largest military power on the earth, that has constantly, through whatever means they could get away with, try to undermine it. And the question is why do it? And they do it because of the example it sets, even this small country sets for the world, and for especially for all oppressed, exploited people, for working class people of every nationality around the globe, because it's an example. I cited earlier the medical system, the fight against institutional racism, which whatever problems still exist, you know, it's very advanced around in terms of the world in that fight and leading that fight. Same for women's rights and all of that. But all of that is under attack by the U.S. because it doesn't want an example under the name of socialism and against capitalist exploitation and the crisis of the capitalist system exacerbated by the pandemic. They don't want that example, both for within the United States, especially in Latin America. And we need to defend that example, all of us. And we've united very disparate forces that otherwise don't necessarily work together around this cause of ending the blockade, taking Cuba off the State Department's terrorism list. Can you imagine Cuba, the victim of U.S.-based terrorism, to be put on a list like that by the United States government? It's just outrageous.
You know, Brother Ike, I want to speak to this issue since we're talking about and celebrating the International Month of March for Women. Can you just speak a little bit about Cuba and its relationship with how they view women in their society and throughout the world?
Well, one of the panels at the conference is going to be on Cuba and women's rights today, and we'll have members of the delegation that are leaders of the Cuban Federation of Women that will be speaking, and they will talk about some of the just recently Cuba passed the Families Code, which is one of the most advanced in the world for dealing with families and the problems of families, the rights of children, the rights of parents, grandparents. You know, different types of families. It replaces the old family in the singular code with families code. And this was a process over a year where the Cuban grassroots socialist democracy discussed, debated different clauses, including controversial ones around same-sex marriage, which passed in the referendum, over a process where Cuban organizations and activists and trade unions and women's organizations could all weigh in and debate these things. So they're going to talk about that. And for example, the question of women's right to control their body was codified in law in the United States in Cuba years before Roe v. Wade passed and has now been abrogated in the United States. Similarly, civil rights, Cuba abolished all the Jim Crow segregationist rules and laws in Cuba, you know, within really days and weeks of the revolution, which was 4 or 5 years before the passage of the Civil Rights Bill in the United States. But this, the question of women in Cuba, majority of doctors, majority of professionals, and is a country where women's independent women's organizations have a major say, parliamentary system, structures, debates, and decision-making process that takes place in Cuba. This is why we encourage people. I know, Lee, you just got back with a trip, and other people go, and we encourage people to go because, you know, when you go and see Cuba for yourself, you see the gulf, the chasm, the Grand Canyon gap between the lies and propaganda we're told in U.S. Media, corporate media, and the reality, which is not to say they don't have problems, most of which stem from the U.S. blockade. So we want to push for normalization, push for exchange. The U.S. people can benefit from tremendous Cuban advances in medicine and many other fields. So that's why we're having this conference, and we hope to come out of it with a stronger, more unified movement to end the blockade.
Okay, Ike, in your closing statement again, why they should support the conference, how can they participate, and how can they support the Cuba Sea Coalition?
Well, I would, again, give the website where you can register if you're a member of an organization or represent an organization. That organization can endorse. You can see the whole schedule. You can come. It's at Fordham University, Lincoln Center campus, 60th Street in Columbus in Manhattan. And all the information is on the website. That's us-CubaNormalizationConference.org. So please come and see it. There's great panels, workshops, and we have a big, I almost forgot to mention, Saturday night, we're going to have a big public rally at the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Education and Memorial Center in Washington Heights at the site of the old Audubon Ballroom where Brother Malcolm X was murdered just a week or two ago, anniversary of that. We're having a rally there at that site where we'll have Cuban speakers, we'll have a number of speakers, we'll have Bombayo, we'll have the RBG girls and DJ Brother Spirit Child and wonderful music and speakers. That's going to be, doors will open at 7:30. I think that's 3940 Broadway in Manhattan. Please come to that. Get all the information on the website and join our growing movement.
Okay, Brother Ike, we'd like to thank you and your coalition, the Cuba Sea Coalition, for all the work they are doing. And we're looking forward this weekend and tuning in to your conference. And let's stay in touch. And we most definitely will make sure that Cuba is part of, will not be part of these missing pages of our history. Brother Ike, thank you again for your contribution.
Thank you so much, Lee. And one other thing, people can join it virtually too. So you don't have to come physically if you can't make it in. You can register and watch the whole thing online. Thank you so much, Lee.
All right, thank you, Brother Ike, and keep up the good work. You listen to Brother Ike as he was sharing with you next weekend, 11 and 12. There will be a normalization conference between U.S. and Cuba next week. We encourage you to go out and check the website, participate next week, and learn more about Cuba because Cuba is a special country at this point in time, doing so much for oppressed communities, in particular African communities. So, brothers and sisters, we're trying to give you primary information so you know what's going on in this world. which you know today our theme is the world we live in, and Cuban Spotlight is where we live in. So check out next week, be supportive. And at this point in time, we're going to do a quick break. Again, play some music with a message, and when we come back, we're going to give you a very powerful message through the form of culture, through the form of a poem. We have with us our minister, our sister Mary. She has an excellent poem she will read to you when we come back as it relates to and support the International Month for Women. This is Missing Pages of History. You get up, stand up, and stand up for your rights. And don't you give up the fight. And we're not going to do that. But we will continue to fight as it relates to we must learn our history. And to learn our history, we must play an active role in filling in those missing pages of history as it relates to the contribution that our people have made to humanity. We actually encourage you to come and join MPH Radio and Missing Pages of History as an organization. We want to build an institution that makes sure that our history is preserved, but not only being preserved, but is created, protected, and told from our perspective. He who failed to know the past was doomed to repeat it over and over again. We don't want to do that. So history is one of the most important weapons that we must come to understand that it must be used as a tool to help liberate and move our people forward. And speaking of that, this is International Month for Women, and right now we can use culture as a tool to advance our people because we're going to bring in our sister minister, Sister Mary. She has a poem she has selected for this month, and we're going to bring her in to let her share her talent as it relates to doing poetry, reading the poem. Sister Mary, what you have for us at this point in time?
All right.
The mic is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, and I want to thank the Missing Pages of History, and along with Miss Susie, my brother Alec, the guests and the callers. So I thank you for using your platform to celebrate International Women's Month. The poem is going to be by Maya Angelou, and it's Phenomenal Woman. Pretty women wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion's model size. But when I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my steps, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenal woman, that's me. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man, the fellows stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes and the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist and the joy in my feet. I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's me. Men think sometimes and they have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say it's in the arch of my back. It's in the sun of my smile, the ride of my breath, the grace of my style. I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's me. Now you understand? That's just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk real loud. When you see me passing, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palm of my hand, the need of my care, because I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's me. I pray that you all enjoyed that poem by Maya Angelou. God has given me a miracle, and I just want to thank you all for this platform again, Mr. Lee. You, the show, and Mr. Lee and others have been praying for me. God has answered that prayer. I want to tell you today that I am cancer-free and that God is still in the miracle business. I went to God, and I said, God, they just told me that this is an aggressive cancer, and this was my second breast cancer in the very same breath. God, I need a miracle. I told him, I said, God, I need a miracle. And God did just that. He worked a miracle. And today I can say, because of our Lord and Savior, that I am cancer-free. I thank you, Mr. Lee, for using your platform today. Pray that God has used me, and he's using me every day, I hope, to bless other people. This cancer was not about me. It was all about God and all about God getting the glory. So I thank you, and I give the mic back to you.
Okay, Sister Mary, you know, we're happy that you are in great health now, and we'd like to thank you, as always, for the contributions that you make to this program, MPH Radio. We thank you. Now, brothers and sisters, at this point in time, what we're going to do is we're going to make our transition to our theme today. Our theme today is the world we live in. That's why we're going to talk about, critique the world we live in. Now, you know, sometimes people say innocence of the law is no excuse. Well, we say innocence of not understanding your world today can't continue to be an excuse, because what you don't understand and what you don't know, it does hurt you. So what we want to do is try to conscientize you a little bit more in terms of you understanding the world and what's going on. So we invite you to call in and join in with us by dialing in at 818-337-0016 as we discuss the theme. We're going to bring in our co-host, Brother Alex, and our staff member, Susie, and we invite you. And we speak on various topics as relates to the theme today, the world we live in. You're welcome to make your comments or ask your questions. Because, again, we want to use communication as a tool to improve our community. This is MPH Radio, so let's make our transition right now to our theme, the world we live in. We'd like to direct your attention to an article. If you get a chance, we'd like for you to go and Google up this article. It titles, Exclusive Honey Subsidiary Has Used Child Labor at Alabama Factory. That's right, Exclusive Honey Subsidiary Has Used Child Labor at Alabama Factory. And since this is the International Day for Women, you know, women, they say, are the protector of the children and youth. And it's really interesting in terms of from this article, the central theme is how they have used immigrant children to work at these factories to help build and develop these expensive automobile parts. And the question becomes, a country who stands in for human rights, a country who say they believe in democracy, a country that stands for freedom and justice for all, how have we got to the point where big corporations are using children, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, to work in their factories? There used to be a history of child labor exploitation, which many people will look at and will say probably its origin started back in Europe. And they don't extend it to this particular so-called country as it relates to child exploitation. So we'd like to just bring in Brother Allen and Brother Susan as they read the article. What were some of the concerns and issues they would like to share with our listening audience about, you know, some of the issues concerned that the public need to be aware of in terms of this question using children as cheap labor for a big corporation? Brother Alex, when you read the article, what were some of the things that came to your mind, Brother Alex?
Okay, Mr. Lee, I would first like to thank you for inviting me to the show, as always, and given my opinion and of something that deeply troubles me, and I'm sure troubles many of the viewers. But as every story is told, there's more than one side of it. And we have to investigate, state both sides. But we don't have to come up with conspiracy theories about it being done. We have to look at the common sense, the right and wrong of why things are done. So in this article, you know, after reading it, I thought about it because I had been to the Kia plant many years ago when it was first opened up. And, you know, now it's Kia and Hyundai, you know, they merged together. Even back then, the discussion, because I've sort of been in the automotive business for quite a few years, that was another past of mine. And in dealing with auto parts makers and dealerships and different things, and especially overseas, it's very commonplace for many of their factories to have children working and long hours and under dangerous conditions. So these children in all these other different countries and all were bringing in paychecks for the families that had no other resources of being able to have that extra money, as we would say. But even though the conditions were horrible and they had very few rights as workers, because you're not talking about unionized factories, is again another source of cheap labor, exploitation, you know, of a people that are down on their luck in life, as to say, where is their future to go? These children are working long hours, like adults, trying to do the same productions as their adult counterpart with few benefits. This is not right, any way that you look at it. Even though these families need that money to survive on, governments have to take better care of their populations as far as social issues, educational issues, wealth issues, because they are the ones in charge. And if you're in charge of someone's welfare and education and livelihood, then you should stand up and make things available and resources available that can help that community of people. So all countries basically have failed over the years as far as child labor is concerned. So it didn't astonish me, but the fact that over 10 plants of theirs is in constantly doing it today, not just one, that's eye-opening. And then we got to realize that that's not only to them. It's to other companies and migrant workers who was out in the fields working, and every enterprise of business that we continue to have child labor. And again, I say it's two ways we have to look at that, because the person that's being abused sometimes feels like, hey, that's the only resource we got, you know, to be there. But it is wrong. And our governments and our politicians should stand up and do something, you know, about this. The livable wage people has to be increased. It has to start at the bottom. Executives making 100, 200, 300, 400, half a million, $2 and $3 million a year, I am sure they will not miss a few thousands of dollars if it went down to the lower end wages where they're only making $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 a year. So we have to really readjust our train of thought as managers and owners and business leaders, that the people that work for us, called the employee, deserve better in life. And that's where it all starts. You know, my heart goes out to every child that has to work in these conditions with no benefits. You know, it is just astonishing that today this idea of slavery still exists, because that's what it is. You know, you work in them in a slavery format, you know, to get things done. And so, you know, until we can be honest with ourselves and hold these companies accountable and have platforms and discussions like we're doing today, then this will continue to go on. But I look forward to more comments, you know, about this, because like I say, it's very emotional to me. I just, you know, worked as a child. I got my work permit, moved forward in life, and that was, you know, helpful. But it wasn't a condition or something I had to do, but it was something I enjoyed to do. So when you go to work and you enjoy going to work, it's much more different than having to be forced or it's necessary, you know, to go to work. So I came about it different as a child, labor. And I enjoyed my years, you know, and all the different jobs that I worked as a child laborer. But I did not work under any of the conditions that children are forced to work under now, and especially at companies like this. So I turn it over back to you, Mr. Lee, and I thank you for my time.
Thank you, Alex, for your response. We now go to Susie. Your response to this article, Susie.
Okay. One thing I was thinking about in this article, it was told that the kids were helping the parents, which is understandable that they wanted to do that, but they should have been in school. My thing is, with the educational system down there in Alabama, I know where I'm from, basically once a kid starts school, you sort of monitor the time periods that they are out and not there. First of all, apparently the individuals where allowed these kids to come in wasn't following up with the parents that those kids had to be in school. And why did it take the police for the parent to call to find the kid to find out that she was working at this factory? Something's been missed at that point. Because if you monitor the amount of kids that's in your community that should be in school, someone should have been checking that record out. If that was the case, then these kids may not have ended up working at this factory. And on top of it, with the school, if the school system really got into the number of kids that's there, then, and you know the financial situation of the parents, you can, the kids probably could have worked on a part-time basis or something like that where they could still enable themselves to help their family. That's one thing that I don't understand, by allowing them not to be enrolled in school, period, in order for the monitor what they are doing and to keep them to be able to have to work for these places that's doing these unlawful laws. And basically that's the main reason what I sort of got from the article that's lacking, that should have been addressed the minute they got visas to come here to the U.S. And I thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Unfortunately, as we stated, that's the world we live in. We live in a world with many contradictions. What we're going to do right now, we can go to our second article title, and I'll be up announcing a young man named, hopefully correctly, at the age of 9, David Balogun becomes one of the youngest ever high school graduates. At the age of 9, he became a high school graduate, and he's on his way to college at the age of 9. Now, when you talk about the potential of youth and students and the potential of human beings, I think this is a good example of showing you the unlimited potential of a human being. You have a young African male at the age of 9 that will be going to the university. When we look at and read that story, there are many things coming into play. And one of the things that comes into play for me is just the unlimited potential of the human being and what our youth can be. Not one, but it shows the potential that they all have that capacity. Brother Alex, talk to you a little bit about when you read this particular article, what were some of the things that came to your mind in terms of showing the positive possibilities of our young folks, which I thought was really interesting. Brother Alex, your thoughts.
Yes, again, Mr. Lee, this was another emotional thing because I love school. And I have had kids that were unbelievable and deserved, you know, being grades ahead of where they were. So when I read this article about this young man, it highly impressed me that you could take an individual and determine that not only his IQ, but perhaps his mental ability to focus on his surrounding world was far advanced than the average, we'll say, 8 or 9 year old. Because, you know, once we, you know, look at the situation, well, back to what he was 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, kids show different abilities and stuff. And I'm really thinking that when you're about 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10, you know, you're probably at your best testing age to a certain degree because you can be a little bit more focused as we get older. Sports, music, drama classes, friends, relationships, different things begin to interplay in a child's life. So it sort of takes his attention away. With the video games and different things that are going on now, there's just so much in a child's life that, you know, sometimes that can push them in any direction. So it is just amazing that this young child could take the time to be focused enough to learn so much information. Because when you're looking at, you're talking about years of study, curriculums, programs that will take the normal child at least 6 months to even understand it. And we're talking about this young man was doing it in weeks and months, you know, so, I mean, and we're talking about years, not just, you know, one school year, but maybe 2 and 3 years that he could double up in just a few months' time. So we need more contributions from education, from the government, to help these young men and young women, you know, even succeed, because we need their young minds in the future. they do an outstanding job as it is, you know, among their own community. If we remember a few months ago, the little girl that was collecting, you know, from the tree flies and all, and now, you know, she got recognized. So by, I think it was Yale, if I'm not, those are things that we have to look at. We have young geniuses out here. They do not have to sell drugs. They do not have to prey on each other, rob and steal. You know, there are so many things that our children can stand up strong and be proud of, and not ever thinking about being locked up and going to jail or anything else that, you know, in their future. And because there's just so much on the other side. But we first have to make sure as parents that they are open to everything, you know, not just the violence and everything that we see on TV and in our communities and everything, but we have to make sure that they are open to education and educational values so that they can succeed in this capitalist society. And I thank you so much again, and I pass the mic on to Susie.
Thank you, Alex. And we'll go to Susie. Your thoughts on this young man and his ability to be so disciplined and focused that he can accumulate information and will allow him to succeed to, at the age of 9, to start university courses. Susie, your thoughts on this article?
It's nice to read this article about this young kid at 9 years old. But one thing about it, thank goodness for his parents, because I can imagine that his parents took a lot of time that they spent with him, which encouraged him to learn. And on top of it, I think a lot of our parents, if we didn't have the obligations of work and trying to look out for the household and everything, we'd have even more brighter kids like this young David than we do. But the fact that other things, obstacles sort of get in the way, that parents don't really start real young with the kids to get them to able to expand themselves and really find out that they're really intelligent, bright young kids, but it's those obstacles sometimes that stops them. But it's nice to see this young guy, because we know if he did it, as many others of us can also do the same thing. Thank you.
And what this article shows again, which we know historically when it comes to African people, is that we know who can't be educated. It's a question who shall be educated based upon power and will. And, you know, so again, this is the world we live in. We saw the good in terms of the potential of youth, while at the same time, you saw the bad in terms of human being, in terms of trying to support the youth, in terms of making them to cheap labor. But can you just talk about this issue of the world we live in, as relates to sometimes when the youth does grow up, all kinds of things can happen to them. In this case, the world that we live in, there's an interesting article titled "No Compensation for a Missouri Man Whose Murder Conviction Was Overturned After 28 Years in Prison." And check this article out. Google this article out. It was written on February 26th. And again, it states, no compensation for a Missouri man whose murder conviction was overturned after 28 years in prison. In other words, we sound like we heard this story before. We have a large number of our youth and African men and women incarcerated for being innocent. And later on, when they find out that they were unjustly locked up, what did they get for this? Instead of getting compensation, especially this particular young man, this is very little compensation for being unjustly locked up. I mean, his future not only hasn't been damaged or basically destroyed, but they let him out with no means of maybe to being self-sufficient and living a decent life. And one of the tools that they have used was to create laws in which if your innocence does not come by using DNA, then the state will not be liable for no financial obligation to you. Is this just another way of the state covering itself, knowing that it can do criminal harm against people unjustly, while at the same time don't have to pay the price? your thoughts on this particular article, Brother Alex?
Well, again, Mr. Lee, we come into a huge problem in America because there have been thousands and thousands of convicted people that never committed the crime. And eyewitness testimony or suspect evidence or just outright lying was enough to send you to jail. Well, in most of these states, we have to remember there is very little compensation that you get once you're behind bars. So with that little compensation that they do give you, there's a lot of states that don't give you anything as far as payment for your time while you're there. So if they don't even want to pay you for the time that you're being locked out and you being serviced out to labor with all these new prisons coming on board and private prisons coming on board that can profit judges and lawyers and everybody else, but not the prisoner, so that he can pay something back in restitution to his victims. So when we look at the overall system of justice in this country, it was never fair, was never equal, and it was never right. So we have to realize, how can it be right in this situation? Not at all. So we have to look at the state he was in, like other states that do not pay, when they find that the court system was wrong, when they find the rest was wrong, when they found out that the judge's decision was wrong, when he tried you without a jury. So things happen in this country because, as they say, that's the way it is. Well, that's the way it is because the laws are present and on the books, and the laws need to be changed so that this man can be, and others like him who come behind him, who will most surely be wrongly convicted, can receive some compensation for doing so. So many all-white juries have sent men to prison and sentenced to die in this country, and most of them never even care. And that's what we have to really roll back and think about. Is it time now for us to truly care about our justice system and make sure that we convict the right person, not only with DNA eyewitness testimony, but as in our law says, without a reasonable doubt. Make sure that when we make that decision to take away a man's freedom or woman's freedom or child's freedom, that we know what we're doing. And then if we fail, that we compensate them for time served that they shouldn't have served. We should be above being able to say that we made a mistake, that justice made a mistake. It won't make the years roll back, but some kind of fair compensation should be arranged. And I give the mic back.
Thank you again, Alex. Susan, you know, one of the things about this article is that it seems to have a built-in excuse for states to not to have incentive to change their ways of intentionally convicting innocent people, when they know they don't have to be, you know, financial punitive damage of incorrectly accusing someone of doing something that they didn't do. What was your thoughts when you read this article? Not only did this young man lost 20 years of his life, but in normal circumstances, they could break down now his financial compensation and should have received in many states. You talk about millions of dollars. I think he walked away with a couple thousand dollars. So what is just your take, what do you take from this particular article and your thoughts, Susie?
It's surprising that DNA wasn't used at some point during the years that he was in prison. And what needs to happen so that so many don't get out and they don't compensate them once they find out they're not guilty of the crime is that the legislatures and everything, because a lot of states have this law. If they don't use with the technology or DNA, if they don't use it, then 9 times out of 10, if an individual gets out, they won't get compensated. So legislatures need to look at putting some kind of law on the books in these states that at least allows an individual something to give them a start to reincorporate themselves back into society. And also, thank goodness for things like he had the Midwest Innocent Project launched a GoFundMe. It shouldn't be other organizations' responsibility. It should be the court's responsibility. Why can't they actually set up some kind of fund that would allow money to be set aside for when they do have those few cases where people are innocent, to give them some kind of funding to begin their life over as a way of just saying, we didn't get it right, we accused you wrongly, and this is how we want to let you know we were sincere about it. That's the only thing I have to say about this article. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. And would you like to let our listening audience know, if you want to go to a GoFundMe campaign they are organized for this young man, his name is Lamar Johnson. And he was part of the Midwest Innocent Project. Lamar Johnson, they have started a GoFundMe campaign to try to help at least assist his brother try to make this adjustment from being innocently locked up for 20 years to coming out of these, I call them concentration camps, and try to, you know, live like a normal person, if that even possible. What we're going to do right now, this is MPH Radio. We have discussed the issue around the theme, the world we live in. We talk about this whole question of, you know, dealing with our African youth and how they are using youth as a means of cheap labor to look at the potential of our youth. We had a 9-year-old young man who was on his way to university, and then we're looking at what happened to us sometimes as we get older and constantly misused and abused and innocently been accused of something that we didn't do, and how the system has set up a way of making sure they don't get penalized or be penalized for their errors. This is the world we live in. If you have any thoughts or comments based on what you heard or what you read, feel free to call in at 818-337-0016, and we'll take your question comments. And we do have a couple callers online who may would like to make a comment or have a question around our theme today, the world we live in. And we're going to take this first caller right here. Call 7236. Welcome to MPH Radio. Your question or comment on the theme today, the world we live in. Just call 7236. The mic is yours. 7236. Question or comment, please. Okay. Going once, going twice, 7236. Let's move on to caller 4298. 4298. Any question or comments you'd like to make?
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Lee. It's been a pleasure listening to you and the panelists this morning, Susie and the brother, Alex. Certainly, you know, you've discussed some burning issues in terms of the various issues that we're confronted with as a people. The prison to the school to prison pipeline that's been analyzed by the various New Jim Crow and mass incarceration in the USA. There's been a number of books talking about how mass incarceration and this unjust system we are faced with in terms of the justice system is just us, as they say, and so we don't find justice, and we need quite frankly we need a revolution. We need people in power who are really concerned about people, who really have empathy and compassion and altruism and charity and love for the people. And we need to somehow get this kind of people in power. And right now, you know, we're struggling to define and sort out who true leadership is, what revolutionary path we should be on, and how to best behave in this world if we're faced with the contradictions of being in capitalism, trying to struggle for a new democratic society, a new democracy, which is really socialism. So we need an end to the wage slave system itself. We need free education, free health care, but paid for by the state, single payer system. And that way our human capacities will be freed up. We won't just be in a dead end job, but we will be contributing to society and serving the people in the interest of the masses of the people. And so we need a new human being, a new character, a new psychology, a new mindset. That's one that's devoted to serving the people in the interest of the people. And I think it's good that there's going to be a conference next weekend about Cuban normalization, and I support that. And I just want to say thank you and for allowing me to spout off a few of my feelings this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution to today's call. We back. Thank you for your contributions to today's program and continue to support MPH Radio. We're going to try one more time. See us caller 4298. We'd like to make us, caller 7236. We'd like to make a statement or comment. We come back to you one more time. 7236. Statement or comment. I guess.
Yes. Hello, Brother Africa. Thank you for another wonderful, wonderful show. The show touched on a couple of topics. One was child labor, and your speaker, Brother Alex, and Sister Susie. Well, Brother Alex mentioned something, and that is a fact, is that child labor is very much a reality in the United States. And you see that Frito-Lay, Whole Foods, Walmart, and others, and the children are working as roofers, construction workers. Throughout this country, children are working. Even when I was a child, it was very common to find children working. It's like Malcolm X, I believe, said that the problem isn't having a job, it's getting paid. And one of the interesting things about an article that was written a couple of weeks ago is that many of these migrant children are not actually living with their parents. And there was such difficulty finding parents for all these children that had been separated from their families and put in cages that we heard about during the Trump administration until Biden's administration came along, and they were just trying to find someone to take the children. So what I see is that they need to be vetted. And it is time for a true revolution. The District of Columbia has passed a bill recently. It hasn't passed it yet, but it has a bill before the D.C. City Council, that is the District of Columbia, to lift the embargo against Cuba. And that bill is PR 250013. And I would urge people to write to City Council. And this movement is called the DC Network to Normalize Relations with Cuba, that has been working with Councilmember Robert White to advance this piece of legislation, this bill. And their contact person is a woman by the name of Cheryl Labash, capital L-A-B-A-S-H. Is it okay for me to give her number or to give the number out for the network, Brother Lee?
Is it all right what you think for under your name? If you don't mind, we don't have no problem. Give the number out.
Yes, it's 301. This is for Kush Kennard. 301-875-9073. And I would urge everyone, whether they're in the district or not, to write the District of Columbia City Council at 1350 Pennsylvania Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20,004, to try to, you know, let them know that we as citizens support lifting this embargo. And again, I hope I said the bill right, is PR25-0113. And it's called Sense of the Council on the Restoration of Cuban-American Relations Resolution of 2023. And again, I want to thank you for this great show, but I want to remind you that there are invisible workers. Unfortunately, African-American children are very often working these jobs, and they are unseen and unpaid. And we have to understand that in order to bring about real revolutionary change, we must remain focused and not confuse reforms with real, not to confuse reforms as anything other than what they are. They're end to a means, but they are not the end. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carla, for your contribution and your thoughts on today's subject. At this point in time, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we have some public announcements we would like to make about how you can support MPH, as well as we will have our final thoughts in terms of a message to the community from Brother Alex. This is MPH Radio, and may God us living on the front line. That's right. They got us living on the front line. Since you live on the front line, you might well fight. You only have two choices. Either you can get your freedom or death. So you want your freedom, you're on the front line, let's fight. But let's fight intelligently. Let's fight in an organized manner. Let's fight in a manner where we are conscious of knowing who are our friends, who are our enemies. And one of the greatest tools we can use is the tool of our mind. You must use history as a tool to help move our people forward. We come back to everyone to help build MPH Radio as well as its organization and help us fill in these missing pages of history as it relates to the history and the contributions that our people have made to humanity. This is what we're all about. We want to transform the mind. And the best way to transform the mind is to feed the mind information so the people know who they are, what they have done, and what they can do. Come and join us. If you'd like to be a friend and supporter of MPH Radio, you can write us at mphradio@yahoo.com. You can make a contribution to us by sending a contribution or donation to Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. Or you can mail us a donation and send it to Missing Pages of History 1 at Yahoo. That's right. You can just hit the button through your phone by mailing it to us and mail it to Missing Pages of History 1 at Yahoo.com. Wherever there is economic dependency, there can be no freedom. So the people you must be and support your institution. Come and help join us and support us. Also, we'd like to remind you that every other week you can listen to MPH Radio. Our next program will be March the 18th at 1 p.m. So make sure you put that on your calendar, share the word, spread the word, and let's try to be our listenership all over the world. Help spread the word. MPH Radio comes on every other Saturday. We'll be back on 18th. And we have some good news for our friends, supporters, that in April, we'll be going back live in the Richmond metropolitan area on Comcast and Verizon Cable Company. In April, we'll give you the auction dates starting in April at the next program. So make sure you check out and look out for us in the area. If you get a chance to come through this area or you live in the area, we'll be coming out on Monday nights at 6 p.m. to 7. So tune in. That's coming up with MPH TV Radio Live. So like always, we need your support. We need your membership. It's open. Write us and let us know. You would like to become a friend, supporter, or a fan club, and become a member, active member. We want to build this institution and use communication as a means to build our communities, our underserved communities. So what we're going to do right now, we have discussed the world we live in, and what we want to do right now, we're going to turn this program over. See our co-host, Brother Alex. He has a message to the community. Brother Alex, we are turning it over to you. What is the message that you'd like to share with our community today? Brother Alex, the mic is yours.
Well, Mr. Lee, for the next three programs, if it's okay with you, I want to really talk about history. And this is history because it's about to be written off, us as a culture. Because now there's somewhere in someone's idle mind that the black culture in America should be done away with. Our histories, our libraries, our holidays, our books, our culture should all be written away. But what I want to do today is look past that. And I give you one of the foundations that we truly needed in this country, and that's the compromise of the 13th Amendment. Often wondered if presidents, U.S. Congress, or the Supreme Court through the years held the belief or even acknowledged that the common rights mentioned in the Constitution were just and fair to all. Even today, as many argue, a citizen's right. By what fundamentals do they justify their case? At one point, did Jefferson or Washington see all men and women created equally? I would say no. Today, with many minorities and women in Congress, do others see them as equals or less? We are being tricked today by some media outlets and educational scholars that America is on the path of social righteousness and all will be well in 50 years or more. That is not possibly true. The American citizenship and naturalization is more threatened today than ever. The right to vote has been gerrymandered for many years to support the age-old politics of who needs to be in power in America. It is swung from party to party with no end in sight. Once poor white women, Negro men, and all women received the right to vote, changes had to be made to sustain power and influence in America. It seemed like within the power of Congress, especially the Senate, the struggle to convince the privileged that the forgotten Americans needed resources to thrive has landed on deaf ears. The plight of the poor, homeless, the illiterate, the mentally ill, and the disenfranchised of all races go unnoticed in America. Things such as federal minimum wage increases, educational assistance, policing, justice, gun violence, and prison reform is off the table of discussion. Are we not the leaders in reform and accountability to the world? The U.S. Constitution was put to the test during the Civil War to extend citizenship to minorities. President Abraham Lincoln was influenced by Negro leaders of the day who risked their wealth, property, and lives to speak about the Negro was bound in chains. Lincoln began debating with Congress about the slavery issue, speaking that then was the time to free all slaves. He had to be the one that history would turn to as not only the great emancipator, but the master architect of the 13th Amendment. Lincoln tore for almost 2 years until finally he did what no other slave-owning president had done. He debated the advantages of the freedmen, how America stood better in the eyes of man and God, that all men should be free. Men that seek to hold another in bondage and servitude are cruel men indeed. The acceptance of slavery is barbaric. Slavery is a failed institution of criminal minds that defend their success in title, wealth, and property. The injustice of denying one's right to freedom was started by those who destroyed the self-worth of another. Many leaders took captives over the thousand years of man's existence, but set them free after a few years of labor, and they became citizens of good standing. Not until the 14th and 16th centuries, when South and North America were invaded by the colonial European powers of Europe, did race factor in the mass kidnapping, selling, torture, and killing of the indigenous people of the world. To make the cruelty of slavery acceptable to Christian leaders, the people who made this into a business had to lie and discredit the culture and history of the ones forced into bondage. They had to make others believe that these taken in bondage were savages and that they, the privileged, were bringing them to religion and knowledge. In the twisted mind of the enslaver, he only saw wealth, power, and control over other human beings. For centuries and even today, some feel that slavery was a good thing. Many Europeans believe that it was a Christian thing that God allowed to thrive in America for over 400 years. No, God did not allow or approve of America's slave torture of its citizens. The foundations of this country were nearly torn apart due to the fight to free Africans, freedmen from slavery, and whites who called themselves abolitionists because they wanted to abolish the evil thing called slavery early since the 1600s. Rhode Island was the first state to abolish slavery in 1776, followed by Vermont, 1777, and Pennsylvania in 1780. By 1860, most states opposed and had abolished the evils of slavery and sought a better nation that favored the national government to its end. That is one of the main reasons Abraham Lincoln was elected. The Christian abolitionists who voted for Lincoln believed he would at least debate the issue with Congress. Upon Lincoln's election, many in the South saw that this was an end of a life of luxury, power, wealth, and the right to do as they please with their slaves. This was too much to lose, and to see their property that you had degraded and abused was now being considered your equal. A new conservative attitude rose in the South that still exists today, of white privilege that has spread across America to still hold on to the defeated beliefs, old South and its traditions of unconditional slavery of all Negroes, free or not. 12 presidents owned slaves, and countless others worked for free at the White House and all federal buildings. The Negroes built the White House, the Capitol building, and many of the other buildings and homes in Washington, D.C., many of the state capitals and the great plantations all over the country, and never received any wages. The U.S. government may have not defaulted on its world debt to others, but will always be indebted to those who built this country without being paid a cent. Lincoln realized that his history was sealed. He could not avoid it as presidents before him. This was the only way to officially end this cruel stain of reality that existed in the U.S. in order to form a more perfect union under God's love and acceptance. The idea of chattel slavery was that one was a slave to death, that his spouse and children could be separated and sold as cattle. He argued that the beliefs of the slaves' toll of work being free without compensation was wrong. He spoke of the separation of one's family to settle one's debt was wrong. He spoke of and discussed that the beatings, hanging, torturing, and raping of Negroes was against the commandments of Christian justice. Lincoln met and debated with congressional members to adopt and ratify a simple 13th Amendment that stated simply Section 1. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, wherefore of the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Section 2, Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. The amendment was presented to the states on February 15, 1865, and Georgia was the state that required it to be applied and be included as an amendment to the Constitution. Sadly, Lincoln did not live to see the fruits of his labor. About his belief that the nation had to start somewhere to finally do something right for Negro citizens. He helped lay the groundwork for the much-needed 14th, 15th amendments to follow. To end slavery in America was not an easy task. The fight to remove the evils and lies of generations in power is for historians to debate until the end of time. We can all agree that to try to erase the history or the culture of the people held captive, mistreated, and disenfranchised only adds to the confusion, ignorance, and hate by all parties concerned. Slavery, in any form of existence, is wrong. There is nothing to support its existence except to do an injustice to another. Our ancestors fought to be free every day of their lives, taken from family, shackled in chains, tormented day and night in a strange land where they had no rights and were considered beast and property. Yet they survived on faith and each other. Lincoln called it a king's cure for all the ills. Little did he know that Jim Crow law, black codes, and others would descend upon the Negroes' opposition to the fair and equal justice he woke up. And I would like to thank you, family, and I will present 14th on the next show.
Thank you, Alex, and to our listening audience, the views that you have just heard and were expressed is by the author and not necessarily those of MPH Radio and members nor its affiliates. If you have any comments that you would like to make, you can send your comments to mphradio@yahoo.com. Until the 18th, same time, same station, we'd like to encourage you to help support MPH Radio by sharing this program with your network and your audience when you receive it, as well as to become a member, a supporter of MPH Radio. And you can do that by emailing us, stating that you'd like to be a member supporter of MPH Radio, and we can tell you how and what would be your responsibility. Again, we are no more greater than the participation. We need you. Come and help us build this institution. And it's become very important that we must fill in our missing pages of history. Today's theme, the world we live in, is just that. We live in a world that is having impact on our people globally. If we don't like the way the world is, then we have a choice. We can fight to change it, or you can choose not to fight. In that case, it wouldn't be changed. What is your choice? We are chosen to fight it. We are chosen to fight it in the capacity of understanding that if people need to know their history, know their past, in order to understand the present, so they can be properly prepared to go in the future. So come and help us fill in our missing pages of history. Until next time on the 18th, we remind you, support the U.S.-Cuba Normalization Conference next weekend. And I believe you can go to the website. I believe the website is www.us-cubanormalization.org. Check out, join it, support it. Until next time, let's continue to fill in our missing pages of history. And we'll leave you with some music with a message. Not only will we sit on the dock of the bay, but we'll wait for you to come, because we are here for you. This has been the voice of MPH Radio. We thank you for listening and allowing us to come into your homes today.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, people tell me to do. So I guess I'll remain the same, sitting here resting my bones. And this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of a bay, wasting time.
When I was pregnant in jail, I thought I was going to have a baby and the baby would never be with me, but I was acquitted a month and 3 days before Tupac was born. I was real happy because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Had tears with my baby sister. Over the years we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who's thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a queen mama, you always was a black queen mama. I finally understand for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you,
dear mama.
You
appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you?
There ain't nobody tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they showed a young brother love, I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I sang it. I ain't guilty, cause even though I said it feels good putting money in your mailbox, I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you, cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps she was given, and mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone, trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you,
and dear mama,
baby, no one above
you. You all appreciate it. Pour out some liquor and I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me, and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand.
thank you all, appreciate it.
Dear mama,
place no one above
you. You all appreciate
it. Don't you know we love you?
And dear mama, dear mama,
your white teacher.
brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin. People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preachers? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had
together so that we could love each other, sister.